Mm-hmm.
All right. So expanding the design object, this lecture extends further the first lecture that I gave in this course about the current state of design objects that are expanding from materials, building materials, towards experiences, interactions, what I call emergent performances. Good morning. I hope that you already checked out the slides from the first lecture, because it's very well connected to this one. If you haven't checked out, then do it after this lecture. The first lecture was more like describing the state of the situation and how historically the design object is changing. And today you actually start trying out techniques that I found out useful for expanding design objects. Right? So just to remind you about the three different types of design thinking that I also explained in the second lecture. Systematic design thinking. First, you define requirements before you start. You design separate modules. You create systems that connect all parts. You avoid mistakes and failures. You make decisions based on quantities. And you design on explicitly constraints. Which fields are very common on this kind of systematic design thinking? Can you name it? A practice that a professional field that uses this kind of thinking? Engineering. Engineering. But also a part of business administration, also, especially the Tayloristic approach for administration. And here is an example of a systematic design house software concept that was also mentioned in the last lecture. So why is systematic here? You describe a house only by using the information that the house represents. That you show no images, you show no feelings of being in the house. Nothing of that matters because you only approach from one of its sides. And then you are systematic on trying to describe the house in that way. Intuitive design thinking. The project stems from a moment of inspiration. The concept is visualized through sketches, which transform it into alternatives and models. The project is refined until it reaches a high degree of internal coherence. The project is not implemented by its creator. It must be defended or sold. And very often it's forgotten on drawers and files on your hard drive. Most intuitive design thinking never gets the point of implementation. So which fields is this design thinking common? Graphic design, product, more graphic design, not so much, but product design. Yeah. Oh my God! I believe that you guys. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, for me, the main striking thing is this: you probably have sketched out hundreds of products across your course, and then you won't see these products being coming through because it costs so much, and you don't have the means to implement them. That's why. You need engineering, and not only the engineer. You need the whole supply chain that actually makes product viable, possible to implement, feasible to implement. So also very common in architecture. This is a work from students of our previous class. They designed eyebrows just based on their feeling. They just looked at each other and then they draw the eyebrows as they wished. They weren't using any, I would say, method or systematic way of doing it. It was completely intuitive. And then you can see the variety of drawings. And expensive design thinking, which is the one we are emphasizing this course, the project stems from developing empathy by a particular type of person. Work is collaborative and involves many disciplines. Once you develop empathy for some people, you may want to invite them to join the project. And design modules are simple and accessible in order for all these people to be able to engage with a design project and collaborate. And if you have too many different people joining the project, then you have a holistic vision, because each person will content their ideas based on one of these aspects: social, psychological, technical, financial, and so on. And that gives you a holistic vision. This is kind of also very common in design, graphic design, product design, digital design as well. But not all graphic design, digital design, product design, and fashion design is based on this. You know some teachers here in this school that work much more in this way, and some teachers that work more in this way, and I work in this way, and that's why I emphasize this course. But I'm not making any argument against the other two approaches. I'm just trying to emphasize the one that I've been working with, and I'm trying to show how this works. Expansive design, thinking, you try to go back to step back behind and then think about what is this? What is this that I'm trying to expand? Is this what is a house? Why do we need a house? And then you start to ask these fundamental questions, and then you find some kind of underlying idea behind the initial motivation for the project, and you do not just design what you ask for. You rethink what you are designing. Here you see a group of students trying to explore why do we need to have a house, and how difficult it is actually to buy and purchase a house here in Curitiba in our current economic situations. Most people in Brazil do not own their own houses. Mm-hmm. And why is this? Is there so much pressure for people to buy a house? So again, what is the object of design? What do we design when we design? I applied the framework I developed in my thesis, and the historical transition between construction materials to the modern performance. I applied this to the house object. So I applied this to the three objects we worked before: house, eyebrows, and websites. And what happened? In the past, people would buy a brick house. That's all I want. I like brick, the material, and then I asked for someone to build a brick house. But in the 20th century, people started to bother about styles, because there were a multitude of different styles. In the past, there were just the same style for everybody in the same region. And now you have a modern house that breaks with the previous styles. Modern design, modern architecture, they are more like iconoclastic. They try to destroy the past and rebuild it from scratch. So you have a modern house, you could have a postmodern house, you could have an old-fashioned house, whatever. The style matters more than the materials. And we are still living with this object. Once our designers or architects are required to design a house, to interior design, they are asked to design a modern house or postmodern house or whatever style house. They are not asked to just design a brick house. This is not the object of design any longer. However, we are also living with a new object coming to the surface, which is the emerging performance. And people try to design dwelling experiences. And that means you might not even live in a house. For example, if you have a nomadic habit of moving, commuting here and there, you might not own a house, not sleep in a house, but you still want to feel that you are living in that place. And that's very true in Japan. In Japan, you have this kind of micro hotels that are kind of like a house that you live there for 20 days or so. Very cheap, very compact, and they are built for this lifestyle of nomadic people. We don't have that much in our society here in Brazil, but for example, people that live in poor conditions, they sometimes dwell a lot. You can see now in Curitiba, a lot of people are dwelling around the streets, and they are creating their own home, so to speak, and those small places that they find
that are comfortable enough for sleeping.
And they are creating homes, these emergent performance. So,
but like in this case, the emergent performance, could it feel like for hostels? Like,
yeah.
Like people that travel a lot, sure, and you have a place and you can share experiences, like the experience matters more than the dwelling?
Yeah, sure. You don't go to a hostel because you want to be comfortable, right? Yeah. You go to a hostel because you like the sociality of it. I mean, you meet new people, right? However, I heard recently from a friend of mine who was in Amsterdam to visit me. She was in a hostel and she, my goodness, nobody's speaking to each other here. People are all the time on their phones. Mm-hmm. And it used to be the case that you go to a hostel and you meet strangers. It was like a non-spoken rule, right? Yeah. You're up to it. But then she was starting to chat and people would just, blah blah blah. They would not really pay attention. They were not willing to that. And that's something that could be designed. For example, you could not have a Wi-Fi on your hostel. That's one way. Or you could restrict Wi-Fi to certain areas of the hostel. Yeah, that's what people are expecting from artists and designers, that they start thinking about these experiences. Let's look at the same transformation in eyebrow design. In the past, eyebrow design was all about hair removal. But then, now it's more like a style that you have eyebrow design as a field. And then some graphic designers and product designers, they are mad about it. This is not design, but it is. They really have a lot of knowledge and experiences on trying to shape different styles, shape different identification to convey some meaning through the shape of the eyebrow. And you have seen through the systems that you designed last week that it's not that easy, right? But we also live in times when it's starting to become more like an aesthetic treatment, more just than just the eyebrow, but the whole aesthetic experiences. It's not about your face, it's not about your body, it's about feeling good with yourself, right? And these aesthetic experience treatments, they include eyebrow treatment, they include skin treatment, and they also include relaxation. They include some strange Asian techniques, right? It's all included in aesthetic treatment. So this is more like an emergent performance, and that's the new object in this activity coming about. Last but not least, the website of the design object. The beginning of the internet, if you knew HTML plus JavaScript, you were a website or a webmaster, as they called it before. That's all you need to know. Forget about design theory. You don't need that. Nobody even thought that this was actually a design task, that this was a design object. People were just thinking it was just about having control over the material. But now you have web design, and then you have a complex entity, and if you ask a digital designer or a complete web designer, they will tell you, oh, it's so big, website, blah, blah, blah. Right? Nobody have tried paying money. Nobody have tried in the past lecture to design a website builder, but it's very, very difficult. You have so many pairs. However, there's this emerging new object. The user experience, or sometimes called user interface or experience design. There are many different ways, information architecture, usability. They use different names for that, but what they mean is that once we are designing websites, we are not focusing on the website, we are focusing on the experience of the user. And that's what we try to design. We try to design experiences that are remarkable, that people would remember that experience forever. And they will have a kind of association between a brand and the experience of using their products or their services in a unique way. So that's the expansion of the website design object. And this kind of a transition here is what I would like you to try to apply in another object. The object you focus on, we will start with that in the next week. So you probably choose an activity to study, then you will see what is the object of that activity, and then you will try to go from uh, the, the basic building blocks of that activity, how it was in the past, how it is now, and how it's going to be in the future. Mm-hmm. So this is the basic structure of the project that you're going to develop in this course. First of all, we need to discuss what is an object, to give you a very clear-cut definition, because this is an important concept in this course I will use all the time. An object is a definition that I use from activity theory. This is the basic theoretical stance that I use in my thesis, and you don't need to know everything about activity theory, but it gives you a lot of interesting techniques to apply, right? Looking at this, forget about these definitions, looking at this picture, what do you think is the object of his activity now?
The pen.
The pen is his object?
The food.
The food is his object, right? Why is the food? Because the food is what he's trying to transform, right? He's trying to transform the ingredients into a nice meal. And the pan and I remember the Dutch ladle word before English, so that's the problem, because I was practicing both languages at the same time, and all the time get confused in my mind. Alright, so here he's using spoon, he uses pan, and all of different kind of tools to transform an object. So an object is something that has a concrete and an abstract existence. So there is a concrete existence of this ingredients, but there's also the abstract notion of meal. What is a meal? What are the dishes that you have in a meal? This is all abstract, this is all convention, this is based on culture. So you travel on the road and you experience different meals, but in the end, at the bottom line, you're just eating ingredients, like you find anywhere. Sometimes you have different ingredients, but what is food? Food is based on ingredients plus the concept of meal. Therefore, it has a concrete and abstract existence. A food or any object raises different motives, sometimes conflicting ones. Have you tried, for example, to discuss what are you going to cook today with another person if you are cooking together? Sometimes it's very difficult to decide, right? Because for the same object, there are different motives. And some people have a motivation for eating healthy, some people have a motivation for eating greasy and tasty. And sometimes you cannot find a common ground for that. And then you just divide. Now, one day we eat greasy, another day we eat healthy. Right? And the last tip for identifying what is the object of an activity, you can ask this question. If I pull this out from this activity, is this activity still meaningful? For example, is it possible to cook without food? No way. So is it possible to give classes without knowledge? No way. So now you need to understand what is the object of teaching, or what is the object of cooking, and so on. So you will have a lot of tasks for identifying what is an object of activity, and I know the translation of this term is not very good, because this theory is originally Russian, and the notion of object in Russian is different from the notion of object in English, and it's also, I think, in Portuguese. But think about when I say object, é como se fosse objeto na minha atenção. It's not like object in terms of physical sense, right? And the most common mistakes in activity theory is to misplace objects for instruments or instruments. For example, you confuse food with pans and whatever you use for cooking. Once you have identified objects and instruments in an activity, you can start noticing that
There are connections between different activities,
and the same thing can become two different objects.
If you cook for yourself, you have an object, which is food, and then you consume the same object to in your own self-feeding activity. However, if you're working in a restaurant, or you're cooking for guests, then you may have two different activities. You have cooking activity, and then you have eating activity. Because people who eat, they don't cook. Then you have a division of labor here. Some people cook, some people eat. And when these people are worried, they are concerned about serving the food, while these people are concerned about eating. And they do not eat the same thing that was cooked. What?
Yeah, because if you say in terms of objects, right, if you say in terms of ingredients, they are eating the same thing that was cooked. But you do not eat what the ingredients, you eat the meal, you eat the concept. Some people say, even design like to say, you eat with your eyes, right? And that's the
difference. Once food is your cooking object, you are concerned about cooking time, ingredients cost, labor cost, profit margin, preparation complexity, conservation. Once you are eating, you are concerned about completely different things: taste, texture, health, nutrition, combination, price. You don't want to matter about this.
You don't even want to know. And if people start to explain, oh, this was so hard labor to make those things, and then, oh, no, it was very difficult. You may even feel guilty of eating that, because someone suffered to food cleaning.
So the same material thing can become different objects. This is kind of a more subtle
application of the known concept of objects. So an object can be related, a same thing can become different objects in different activities, right? And as I explained before, the same object can raise many motives, and here are examples about food. And I
love these memes. When someone says, I forgot to eat, I think you must be a special kind of stupid. I plan my entire day around eating.
I cannot understand that. I'm like more like this girl.
Or people don't want to hear about your diet. Just shut up, eat your lettuce and peas, and be sad. I'm eating my feelings, and they are absolutely delicious. No one cares about your protein intake until they find out you are vegan.
I face this all the time. People ask me, oh, so you are vegan? Yeah. Oh, do you have health problems with that? Come on.
Vegetarian.
You're vegetarian.
Yeah. My mom always said that I will die.
You will die?
Yes.
Well, I'm vegetarian for more than 20 years already, but now I'm vegan since the beginning of the year, and I didn't even feel any difference. It's no problem at all, but some people are concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And this object of food raises different motives, and people are sometimes eating for a different reason. I don't eat only for feeding myself. I also eat because I want to be part of the environment. Yeah. So this is my relationship with the environment, and I think that eating meat is not good for the environment, therefore I don't eat meat. But if it was only about the ingredients, I wouldn't mind about eating meat, because there will be no concept about the food.
How is berinjela?
Aubergine?
What?
Aubergine? Aubergine? No, berinjela is a different. No, it's
eggplant.
Eggplant, exactly.
What?
Eggplant.
Eggplant. And there's a second name to it, but I couldn't remember now. Eggplant. Yeah, because it looks like an egg, I don't know. But why did you ask the berinjela?
Because I love berinjela.
Oh, you love it. Well, I'm not a big fan of eggplants. All right. Activity theory is complex since it's a theory of organization transformation. Currently, I'm trying to start a project at Renault, and trying to help them on having design thinking skills in all their team. because they have current big problems with the communication among the departments. And most people are very engineering mindset, the systematic design thinking. And they are really interested in developing more the expansive design thinking. And most of people that work in design thinking approach currently do not have a theory of organization transformation. And they do not know how to transform an organization towards really having a culture of design thinking, an expansive way of thinking about stuff. They just have materials. They know how to use post-its. They may know some problem-solving methods, but they don't have information on what to do next. And Renault already hired design thinkers for a workshop to think about, rethink Renault in terms of digital transformation. That's the motto for change. And in this workshop, they could not figure out what do they need to do to get there, because the designer would just help them to visualize what would be they in the future, what would be like Renault in the future. That simple methods can do, but how do you get there? And then it comes the relevance of having a theory of organization transformation, and that's what you're going to learn in this course. Not just the methods you already used in the last lecture, but you will learn how do you try to integrate those methods in an activity with the aim of changing that activity. Not just trying to design a beautiful instrument. You really try to expand the object of an activity, to make people rethink what they are doing. So what is the main explanation in this theory? That activity changes once the object expands. So everything that changes in society changes because the object is expanding. For example, if you think about the problem of politics in Brazil. The problem of politics in Brazil was Dilma. And once you took Dilma off, you changed the object, then you start to see, well, it was not just Dilma. There was also the economic situation, there was also the political compromises, there was also the commodity crisis, and then people start to realize that the object is much more complex than just the president itself. Mm-hmm. And then people start really doing something, not just complaining. That's the main advantage of her stepping off the presidency. Right? Unfortunately, I would say we could have been smarter than that, I would say. Anyhow, and start doing something before. Anyway, so this is the theory. And the theory has a diagram showing step by step how the object expands. And at the beginning, you have a new need. Once something becomes a need and start to bother people do not understand this need. I need to change, but I don't know in what way, what do we need to change. I just feel like things are going wrong. And then people start to face strong conflicts of motives around the objects. So, no, we should do this way, we should do that way. And then they start having hidden agendas and they fight, and then things get stuck. This level sometimes takes years to overcome. From 2 to 3, it takes years, because people think that they are having these conflicts due to personal problems, personal relationships. Oh, we are fighting because I don't like you. We are fighting because that guy is a moron. No, it's because there is a new need that both of you do not understand. And once you start to talk about it in a constructive way, and then people start putting new motives over that need, then you have a new object emerging. And this object is constructed with new instruments. And then you apply those instruments to the activity, and other people that did not go through this process, they resist. They say, well, that's new, these new technologies, this new way of working, these rules, we don't like that. We don't want to work in that way. And then after a while, you may or may not consolidate a new object and also an activity. This may or may not happen. Sometimes you also receive back. For example, you create a new motive, you create a new instrument, but the conflicts are so huge that they just stop the changing process going on. In design schools, we learn that what we do is to design problems, define problems. And we try to change activities by solving those problems. Design problems, what do they do? Which I, now I'm relating design theory with activity theory. Design problems, they try to make unspeakable motives clear to the people. So they can speak about something that they did not understand. That's why designers, they add so much to a project once they start problematizing, once they start to say, well, your problem is not exactly a website. Your problem is more like communication with your customers. And that's what designers add the most value in any project, because they never take for granted the problem that the client gives. So in that sense, you could say the designer is trying to expand the object, right? However, what is a problem for someone may not be a problem for another person. And if the designer is working with multiple stakeholders and not just one client, you will soon realize that it's not difficult to define what is the problem, really. This is because design problems, they basically do not have a right or wrong solution, because they exist to motivate people for doing something about the need state. They do not exist to be like a mathematical problem, logically solvable, right? It's difficult to tell when a need is fulfilled, because the need is never fully understood. And most designers do not get this. They say, well, this is the need, we need to solve this, and then with my design solution, the need is fulfilled. However, designers hardly test this for proofs that they really fulfill the need. Because actually nobody knows what is the need really. Design solutions, they try to change activity through instruments that better deal with current needs, even though you don't know the needs. So the instruments, they try to materialize the motives, and it's never final or ultimate. There's always something left to prove. Design solutions, they do not solve, as we all know, right? Completely the problem. New instruments may face resistance to change and receive back strong conflicts of motives, preventing the consolidation of new objects. So you see here that this discussion of design problems and design solutions is very much related to the change theory that I showed before. The main thing that designers are not aware most of the time in their own theory is about this conflict. How do you deal with conflicts in design projects? How do any design theory will tell you about what to do? And however, in the expansive design thinking tradition, people are worried about this, and that's what my thesis tries to contribute. So based on my thesis, I list 6 tactics that you can use to try to expand the design object, and you will have an exercise soon to try these tactics, right? Investigate the motives behind the object. What are people motivated? Why people are motivated on transforming this object? Create a provocative solution that reframes completely the object. Import an instrument for another activity. Promote the confrontation of interests. Well, I'll show examples, right? It's better. So investigating motives behind eyebrows in society. Look at this. What is the social function of having eyebrows? So instead of just designing an eyebrow system, they try to rethink why do we have eyebrows? And these guys, they have a provocative solution. Why don't you just deal with eyebrows like mustaches? So they rethink. And then once you have an eyebrow like a mustache, then you will design it much more carefully, and it will mean a lot of different things. So think about a man. How strong is a mustache in your face? You start using mustache, right? You didn't have this mustache last week. Or did you? Oh, you already had it. All right. Well, it's growing, right? Well, yeah, people are noticing, I suppose. Or not?
Yeah.
What do they say?
The first time you look like more serious than usually, like older. Usually, I think the difference when you like shape, you take it off, all of it. Oh, so you're so young. This kind of stuff. Oh, I look like a kid, 14 years old. So. I think it's the most shocking part. But it has like climate experience. It's like moon movers. It's like I have only the mustache, like really large. And something that it I think the difference between the mustache and the eyebrows is that the mustache, as it grows faster, you can change like whatever you want.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm gonna shave it. Yeah. I'm not shaving.
But the eyebrow, if you change something and you don't like it, it will stay for a long time until it, and maybe it's not even coming back. And an interesting thing is that they use the tactic of importing instruments from another activity. So what they got this idea, because in this, by chance, in this toolbox, I do have some mustache, like postiches, I don't know if this is a word in English, but I do have some mustaches here. Right, and then they just look at this mustache. Oh, why don't we have eyebrows like mustache? And that's why I tell that materials are so important, and you need to have a diversity of it, because you never know which kind of idea people would have. So these are instruments that come from a range of different activities, and then people, if they just put this instrument, or for example, those little babies here, do you know for which activity is this for?
No.
This is for brinde de festa. You know that, right? Yeah. It's just a gift for parties. But I brought this, and then many people are using this as users when they want to represent something in their models. And it really makes people laugh and then get at ease, and then they change the activity, they rethink about it. I don't know. Right? So that's the reason why I have those things. Another tactic is to have shared objects. So you have eyebrow design as something that is shared between the user of the eyebrow, so to speak. It's a bit weird to say that you're using your eyebrow, whatever. But if you go to an eyebrow designer, that's how they conceptualize it. You are using their eyebrow design, right? And it's not your eyebrows any longer. It's their design.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, but it's true. That's how it works. So they really got this concept further in this exercise. And this was the most depressing group. They confronted the questions of who are you with a possession of a house. So how does having a house contribute for answering this question? And then people why do they have a house? Because they want to isolate themselves. They want to show off. Whatever, right? So it was a very interesting question that they tried to confront things. They tried to put some friction in their exploration of the object. And last but not least, the contradiction of working hard to accumulate properties and having no time to enjoy them. That's so strange, and it's something that we really have to deal in our lives in a capitalist, very competitive system that you believe now. Alright, so now let's talk about the instruments that I was showing before. They are co-creation materials important for many different activities. I once said, where do you find these things? I just go to places when there are small stuff and I start looking. And what is the word? This word for furbing, what is the name? When you're fuçando. I don't know. Yeah, the name in English, but when you really try to find something special and unique, and you don't know, I don't know why I'm going to use this. Why do I buy this? Why do I put this on this toolbox? I don't know, but I feel like there's a lot of different possibilities from this. And that's the criteria I use to bring objects. If the object is too, the meaning of that object is too fixed, and I don't see so much flexibility, I don't put it on my toolbox. Alright, let's see the objects I use often and why and in which situation. So this is like the guide, but you will realize all this by trying out all these materials. Post-its. Why people use post-its so much in this expansive design thinking approach? Because they are good to generate ideas in silence and discuss later. What is good to discuss in silence? Do you have any idea?
To discuss in silence?
No, to generate ideas in silence and not just speak to your in your group.
Not
what is the advantage?
Later.
That's one reason. But what are the advantages? If I tell you, let's brainstorm in silence, and everybody has to put their ideas on post-its. Why would I do that?
Maybe not to influence the other ideas.
Yes, that's also true. What else more?
I think you keep focus on your own idea.
Right.
Like to express it better, because when you listen to someone, you can like mess with your head a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you get confused. Yeah. And I think for me the main reason is that I want everybody to participate, and post-its are more accessible for all than speech. Some people are very shy to speak in groups, especially if this group is having a heated debate. For example, they are really expressing the conflict. Some people really receive back, they do not talk at all. And I want them to be engaged with the situation because they might have a better solution than the people that are arguing.
Yeah.
And then once you have silence during brainstorm sessions, also another advantage, you will avoid one person to dominate the debate. That creative person that really loves his ideas and will strive for really forcing others to buy his idea. And these kind of people are difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
You might have a lot of colleagues of yours in design schools that are like that. And another advantage is that once you have an idea on a post-it, you can put it wherever you want. And then you can group them, regroup them, change here and there. That's also a recognizable advantage of putting a post-it on just regular paper. Lego. People have hundreds of hours of experiences building Lego. Everybody built Lego. It's very good to express complicated things that are difficult to speak. I cannot explain it, but I can show you. And use like your hands, thinking with your hands. That's the basic motto of using Lego. Craft paper turns any space into co-creation space. If you cover a room with craft paper, people really start to feel like, wow, I can draw anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like gives you this kind of rough feeling. Creates an atmosphere of creativity. Small whiteboards, this is something I discovered recently. They are incredibly useful because you can draw together a lot of people, and the big advantage of drawing together, the biggest problem of drawing together is that who's going to draw?
Mm-hmm.
And then one person draw good, better, will draw for everybody. But that person will work as a filter. Anything that will be discussed will only turn into a drawing if that person finds it compelling. If the idea is not compelling, that person will not draw. That's a big problem for group work. Then what do you do? What is different from with a whiteboard, small whiteboard? The thing is that you can erase ideas so quickly, and you can draw on top of it, that it doesn't matter if one person is doing something crap. You just redraw it again. And if you, of course, there's also an advantage. You cannot put your hand on top of it, right? People do this, it's kind of a small detail, nitty-gritty of co-creation. I study by video recording sessions. People sometimes do like this on the paper with their hands because they need to a support for drawing. But once they do that, they do unconsciously with the goal of, all right, this is mine. I don't want you to mess up with my design. So these materials, they are like, how do you say, liso como quiabo. Right? Nobody can really handle it and manipulate. All my materials have these characteristics. I would never be able to translate that into English. Whiteboards on wheels. They have the same advantage of the small whiteboards. However, you can really build temporary places for projects. And I really regret we don't have yet so many of them here at PUC. But I'm really striving to buy those stuff.
I see a lot in the green block.
Oh, the green block has a lot of them.
Yeah, sometimes,
cool.
Not all the time.
On the corridors?
Yes.
Oh, then we could just go there if we want to use them.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing is that you build a feeling of co-creation space that is small enough for you to have the full domain. And people feel like they can join the space and leave in a smoother way. And once you join, you are filled out with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point. Recyclable trash, yeah, it's very much more sustainable than post-its, much cheaper, but a little bit difficult to find good quality recyclable materials and not dirty.
Yeah.
right? But I used in some workshops, and it's quite interesting because people are used to those objects that they throw in the trash, and they can easily ascribe new meanings to them. Play-Doh, well, yeah, it's very good for expressing emotions, for warm-up exercises, and in the picture you see, they are prototyping a new kind of remote control for a television. Mm. They are trying. What if the remote control was like a Dedal? Dedal, you already know from Dedal for costura.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you would control the TV like that? What if you would control the TV what's the object that does this? Like a ball that you press and then change the channel. They used Play-Doh for that. Smartphone videos, they are quick to produce. You can depict everyday scenarios and document interactions across time. It's quite useful and revealing, but there are some techniques for using smartphone I will show you in the later. Hats and masks, especially for people that are shy. Once they try to pretend they are another person, they get much better using those masks and hats. And the masks especially, they reduce the laughter once people get into the character. People who are not used to for acting, they get amazed on their own skills that they didn't know that they have. And they start laughing just because they are enjoying it. However, this distracts them from the character. It's better that you do not laugh once you're not engaged in, you're acting in a character that does not laugh. So general recommendations: prefer flexible materials that you can use to materialize different motives. This is my criteria once I choose to buy something. Prevent a single person to monopolize a material. Another thing I didn't mention: I don't use thin pens. You only find thick pens. Why is that? Because if you have thin pens, people start draw really, really carefully with the details, and then they really go away from the discussion. They're not discussing any longer, they're drawing. And if you have this hard, thick, big, I even have thicker, you experienced that last week. People do not focus on the precision of the drawing, but they focus on the meaning, on generating meaning by talking with other people. Take advantage of last-minute ideas and bring all your materials even if you don't plan on using them. That's why I have this fishing box. It's a fishing box converted into a co-creation box. It should fit all different materials because I don't know which one of them I'm going to use today. And I would like people to start to invent. For example, yesterday, we had a workshop about... with students about the ecosystem of Curitiba, and they had to represent all kinds of aspects of living in Curitiba. And there was of course the colorful Durex that I bought, and they just took one of them and they put, yes, sex is also part of Curitiba, and they started to draw the the place where the prostitutes work and the low zones. It's all there, and these objects create a discussion about how sex is also provided by Curitiba City. It's also part of the city, you cannot deny. So you basically try to make visible the conflicts of motives and the contradictions. And you have the map exactly like, if you look at what is, it's just on that wall, on the corridor, you see what is connected to. You check the map later on. What is sex connected to? Alright. Exercise, you still have, let's say, half an hour to rethink the house, the website, or the eyebrows once they become design objects. So use the materials as you wish and try to apply the tactics, alright?